for Pacifica Radio, April 18th, 2021. I'm Scott Horton. This is Anti-War Radio. All right, y'all, welcome to the show. It is Anti-War Radio. I'm your host, Scott Horton. I'm the editorial director of antiwar.com, and I'm the author of the new book, Enough Already, Time to End the War on Terrorism. You can find my full interview archive, more than 5,500 of them now, going back to 2003, at scotthorton.org and at youtube.com/ScottHortonShow. All right, and one quick programming note for you guys before we get to today's interview. Every year, the Washington Report on Middle Eastern Affairs and the Institute for Research, Middle Eastern Policy, put on what's generally known as the Anti-Israel Lobby Conference in Washington, D.C. Usually it happens the week before the annual AIPAC conference. But since AIPAC is canceled this year, instead they have scheduled it to coincide with the J Street Liberal Zionist Lobby Conference. And it's called End U.S. Support for Israeli Apartheid. It's in two parts. They did the first part yesterday, and I will be participating in session two on next Saturday, April the 24th. And that is at IsraelApartheidCon.org. And I think you have to use the W's there. I'm not sure why. www.IsraelApartheidCon.org. And I will be discussing Israel's role in America's war on terrorism and the threat of war with Iran. So again, that is the End U.S. Support for Israeli Apartheid Conference, sponsored by the Washington Report on Middle Eastern Affairs and the Institute for Research, Middle Eastern Policy. That's next Saturday, April the 24th, streaming online at www.IsraelApartheidCon.org. All right, you guys on the line, I've got Ray McGovern. He used to be a CIA analyst. In fact, he was the head of the Soviet division back when, and he briefed Reagan and Bush Sr. in the Bush years. And this whole century, he has been really the co-founder and leader of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, which is a bunch of retired spooks and so forth who like to write essays about why our presidents should not do the things that they're doing. And you can find him regularly at consortiumnews.com and at antiwar.com. And of course, at raymcgovern.com, his own website, we can find all of his video interviews and all of those things as well, too. Welcome back to the show. Ray, how are you, sir?
I'm doing okay.
Great. Happy to have you here. And what a great one you have for antiwar.com here. Biden and Blinken blink on Ukraine. I don't even know what you're talking about yet, but I just like that headline a lot. I could feel the weight lift right off of my shoulders there. So the government in Kiev has been threatening to, I guess, restart the war in the east. And then, at least according to the American media, based on government sources, the Russians are building up their forces on the other side of the line there in case. And this could all... Oh, and Biden and Blinken have been passing out war guarantees and saying, yeah, no matter what, we will back you up. Oh, unwavering, you have the quote here. But then you say that, yeah, no, not really. Biden's backing down. Please say that.
Well, it's a very interesting set of events here. It started on March 24th in real time. The president of Ukraine, Zelensky, announced that the Ukraine was going to take back Crimea, and it was going to go and clean out the eastern provinces there of Donetsk and Luhansk. And, you know, the Russians better understand that this is going to happen. Well, it didn't take a political scientist to realize that was a declaration of war, or tantamount to a declaration of war on Russia. Russia's not going to stand for that. And, you know, it was quite an amazing sort of thing, because the Ukrainians started talking about using armed force to do this. Now, all this time, they've been egged on by the, quote, unwavering, end quote, support of the likes of President Biden, Secretary of State Blinken, Secretary General of the NATO, what's his name, whatever it is, And, you know, Stoltenberg, they're all saying it's wavering. And then all of a sudden, the Russians deploy, now get this, 2 armies and 3 airborne combined divisions to the western border. That's a lot of people. People are estimating that at maybe 80,000, 100,000 troops. And all of a sudden, Biden got religion. Now, Biden famously called Putin on Tuesday to warn him about the dangers here, to say that we've got lots of grievances, but let's get together and talk about all these things that are irritating U.S.-Russian relations. Well, you know, it wasn't Biden that called Putin. He was returning Putin's voicemail, so to speak. Hey, Mr. President, things are getting really, really interesting here. Really, really dangerous. Call me as soon as you can. In other words, Putin was saying, look, enough already. Enough already. We don't want a war, but there's going to be one, and we're prepared to do it. And if Zelensky and the likes of those neo-fascists, neo-Nazis, which is what the Russians are calling the Ukrainian government, if they decide to try to give us a bloody nose, well, that's going to be the end of Ukraine. Biden got the message, okay? Not only that, but he called off the deployment of 2 major naval vessels headed through the well, they hadn't entered the Dardanelles yet, but they were headed to the Black Sea to be there until maybe second week of May. Now, the interesting thing is that in very undiplomatic language, the deputy foreign secretary, Ryabkov, on the Russian side, had warned specifically, just in about this on the same day, actually, that Biden talked to Putin. He said, look, if you deploy those things in the Black Sea, this is going to be openly provocative, his words. American ships have absolutely nothing to do near our shores. They are testing our strength and playing on our nerves. If you do this, the U.S. has to realize that various incidents are very, very highly likely. We warn the U.S. that it should stay away from Crimea and our Black Sea coast for their own benefit, end quote. What did Biden do? He called it off. Now, I think the Pentagon was just happy as can be, to call that off. It's the neocon type people like Blinken who are egging this thing on, who are adducing all kinds of spurious evidence to vilify Russia, including the totally discredited charge that the Russians were paying bounties to kill U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan. And actually, the U.S. government came out with a disclaimer on that just yesterday. So what we have here is a bunch of people in the Pentagon who know what the stakes are. They overruled Blinken to the extent that they got the president to cease and desist this unwavering support and to tell Zelensky, look, don't misinterpret our unwavering support for real support. It's rhetorical support.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Russians.
What he meant was you and him go fight. That's all.
Yeah. So Zelensky on the 9th changed his tune. And he said, you know, we think there should be another ceasefire in Ukraine. You know, we're really bothered. And our commander in chief has warned me that there would be a lot of civilian casualties as well as military casualties. So we don't want to do this. Whoa. So he blinked. Blinken blinked. The president blinked. And the status now is that it looks, well, those ships are not going through the Dardanelles. They're in Cyprus, I'm told, for repairs, okay? And the situation with respect to Ukraine has, in my view, settled down for the nonce. Now, the day after, well, yesterday, the U.S. announced extreme sanctions against Russia for all these terrible things they've done. Now, among those things were hacking. Now, your audience probably knows, if they've been listening, that the House Intelligence Committee released testimony taken on December 5th, 2017. They didn't release it until May 7th, 2020. But what did it say? It said that CrowdStrike, and this was the CEO testifying, admitted that there was no evidence that anyone hacked those DNC emails that were provided to WikiLeaks. No one hacked that, not the Russians, nobody else, because they looked into it and there was no evidence of exfiltration. Whoa. Okay, so if there was no evidence of exfiltration, and that was the reason why Russian diplomats were expelled and why Russiagate completely started, well, how are we to look at these latest allegations about SolarWind, where the Russians are accused of all manner of things, all of which fit into the category of traditional espionage, in my view, unless I'm proven wrong. So here we have the Blinken faction trying to appear really, really strong. After all, we're withdrawing from Afghanistan in total disarray. That is, it will be by September 11th with a complete loss. We're also, you know, kind of not doing a real good job in other areas in terms of showing strength. So last thing I'll say here is that we are acting like the proverbial, according to Richard Nixon, the proverbial pitiable, helpless giant, while Russia has improved its relations with China to the point of a military alliance. And as you may recall, my saying this for almost a year now, if there's a dust up in the Ukraine or in the Baltic or in the Black Sea, you can look to the South China Sea and the Taiwan Straits for some Chinese support for the notion of a two-front war from which any sensible military analyst would shrink and say, my God, what are these political scientists posing as diplomats getting us into? Okay. You know, last thing I'll say here, sure. Scott, is sure. that Barbara Tuchman, the historian, had this wonderful book, The March of Folly, From Troy to Vietnam. And in the end, she said this, just three sentences. A last folly was the absence of reflective thought about the nature of what we were doing, about the effectiveness of relation in relation to the object sought. Absence of intelligent thinking in rulership is another universal. And it raises the question as to whether modern states, and here's the kicker, whether there's something about political and bureaucratic life that subdues the functioning of intellect in favor of, quote, working the levers, end quote, without regard to rational expectations. This would seem to be an ongoing prospect, end quote. That's 40 years ago.
Yeah.
It's happening still.
Yep. And in the case of Russia, and then my next interview, I hope that you've read this article. If not, you got to see it at Newsweek by William Arkin about why America can't end its forever wars. And he just goes on and on, an excruciating detailed explanation of the bureaucracy of the war on terrorism. All the different parts of the CIA and the Special Operations Command and all the different services and all the drone warriors and all the ship's captains and all the everything, and how it works so well now, finally, in their terms, they can't turn it off. It was just like Andrew Coburn wrote this article back a few years ago about how the British bureaucracy in charge of enforcing the blockade on Germany in World War One got perfected right when the war ended. And they were like, well, so we could either dissolve our new department or we could continue the blockade. And so they continued the blockade and decided to starve the Germans into Nazism, you know, because essentially they had this new bureaucracy. And then I guess that's the same sort of thing you're talking about, where, and I know you see this all the time, if we do get out of Afghanistan, it's because the argument is we have bigger fish to fry with Russia and China. And
it's madness. It's really madness to be taking on Russia and China at the same time. The only hopeful note is that our military recognizes this. And although the hotheads in command of the ships out there in the Pacific, and also in the sixth fleet in the Mediterranean, speak a real loud noise. The hope is that that Biden was admonished enough by Putin, it's very clear to me what happened. Putin said, "Look, Ukraine's going to fall apart if they try something stupid." Biden backed off. He's also instituted sanctions that aren't worth the sanctions. People are saying, "Well, what about those terrible sanctions about the Russians?" Well, the only one that really matters, the financial institutions. Well, the Financial Times says today in an article titled "Western Investors Brush Off U.S. Bond Sanctions on Russia." It says now that the bond, they'll just be sold to Russian state banks, and then they'll resell them to the very same Western banks on the secondary market. No big deal, no big deal. I don't understand all that, Scott, but the Financial Times is usually pretty good on these things. So the sanctions and also Blinken adducing the so-called bounties for killing U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan. The bounties that have been totally discredited and officially discredited just the day after he used them to justify these things. It's really come to a difficult pass, and the real problem here is that, as you probably know, 77% of the American people have been brainwashed into thinking very unfavorably about Mr. Putin and the Russians. The figure is 79% or 80%, depending on which poll you believe, for China. Now, if I'm Putin and I'm sitting in Moscow and I'm saying, "My God, what's going on here? Is this preparation for war? Are these people thinking that they can challenge us militarily and that we with our Mach 8 missiles can't counter whatever they put up against us, and China as our ally in the East? What's going through these people's minds?" And so what I see in the future is that Putin will keep calling Biden and say, "Look, here's the reality, Joe. You're not being told the truth by these guys, especially with respect to things like bounties and hacking. And you ought to be very aware that your presidency is going to fall apart if we have to do something that you will consider untoward toward those Ukrainian neo-Nazis." Now, that's what the Russian leaders call these guys. Now, if you know anything about Russian history, you know what Nazi means to those people who lost 26 million people in World War II. So it's an emotional thing as well as a historical thing. And Blinken and his coterie of political scientists know nothing about history, and that's a large part of the problem.
Yeah. Well, and it's absolutely true that, Andrei Perubi from the Svoboda Party over there that used to be called the Social Nationalists, he was the Speaker of the Parliament for like 5 years. And there's no question that the Ukrainian armed forces are infested with members of the Right Sector and Azov Battalion. And the evidence of this has gone on and on. In fact, even The Intercept, for whatever reason, years ago ran a story about Mujahideen from the war in Syria going to fight on the side of the Nazis as long as they're killing Russians. Yeah. These were guys who, because Chechens had gone to fight in Syria, and then they brought some foreign fighters back with them to go join up the Ukrainian Nazis to fight against Russian-backed forces in the Donbass.
Scott, I was in Crimea 5 years ago on the anniversary in June of the German attack on Russia. It was very moving. There was a major meeting in Yalta. I was invited to speak. There were people there old enough to remember, mostly children of people who perished during the Nazi invasion, but also some people a little bit older than me, still around. There wasn't a dry eye I recited a poem from the Russian poet Nekrasov, Nikolai Nekrasov, the poet of Russian grief. It has to do with war and who suffers from war, and especially mothers who suffer from war. This was a poignant manifestation of how real, just 5 years ago, the Nazi attack on Russia was, and how deeply ensconced in people's hearts and minds it was. Putin doesn't have to make this up. He doesn't have to stoke up passion about this. The other thing is that Crimea, for centuries, was drenched with Russian blood, especially under the Nazis, of course. But since Catherine the Great, who was around our time of our revolution, well, was she that set up Sevastopol down in Crimea as the only warm water naval base that Russia was able to put together. There it is. It stands there. There are air bases also in Crimea. Crimea is going to be Russian territory for the rest of my life, for sure. And for Zelensky, aided and abetted by Biden and Blinken, at least up until last Tuesday when Biden and Putin talked, for them to pretend that Zelensky is going to take back Crimea, you know, that's madness. That can only be perpetrated, only be fostered, that notion, by people like Victoria Nuland, who will be number three in the State Department if she is confirmed. And I don't know what the holdup is there, but maybe people realize that she was responsible, largely responsible, for the coup in Kiev on the 22nd of February 2014, which set all this stuff in train and allowed the U.S. let the U.S. impose sanctions, more of which we saw just yesterday.
Yeah. All right. Now, listen, the last couple of minutes here, Ray, can you address the threat of Ukraine and or Georgia being brought into NATO now? Is that really a possibility? I guess the last time the French and the Germans said, no, we're not doing this, and that was enough. But what about next time?
Well, the good news is that the head of the CIA right now, a fellow by the name of Bill Burns, was our ambassador in Moscow on the 1st of February 2008, when all this was being bruited about. Ukraine, Georgia are going to be part of NATO. He was called into the foreign ministry. Lavrov, who was a newly appointed foreign minister, said, Mr. Burns, do you know what Niet means?
This is in the WikiLeaks, everybody. Niet means Niet. William Burns. Yep. It's at WikiLeaks.org. And thank you, Chelsea Manning and Julian Assange, again, for all that. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for mentioning that. That's how we know this. You know, if I've seen one Moscow cable from Embassy Moscow, I've seen about 10,000, all right? This was genuine. And to his credit, Bill Burns reported back to Secretary Condoleezza Rice, look, the Russians have strategic interests, too. They're very defensive about all this. And here is what Lavrov called, quote, a red line, end quote, for us. So what's going to happen? Well, what happened in 2008 in August, just a few months later, was Shakashvili, of head of Georgia, decided to, NATO's going to support me, so I'll give Russia a bloody nose by going into that area just on top of north of Georgia and give the, well, he attacked to kill some Russians. The Russians came through those tunnels and over those mountains and went up to the gates of Tbilisi and said, look, this is not going to happen. So Shakashvili has been an advisor to Zelensky and the other Ukrainians. Finally, he may have said, look, you know, don't be deceived by this bragging, by this, quote, unwavering, end quote, support from all these politicos in the West. When push comes to shove, you're going to get a real bloody nose. Your country is going to be decimated, if not destroyed, by the Russian forces already in place and able and willing to do this, because it's a big deal for them.
Yeah. And by the way, I want to issue a correction here, because I know I've gotten this quote wrong a couple of times. Is I conflated two different things. The Niet means Niet WikiLeaks thing. And then there was another threat that, you know, we could be in Kiev in 2 weeks. But that wasn't Lavrov. He's much more diplomatic. That was Putin. And I forget now if it was a hot mic or if it was just recorded or you know, reported by the diplomat that he said it to, you know, talked to the newspaper about it.
It was kind of an aside in an interview about a year ago, as I recall. But, you know, you're right. He's right. And he probably told Biden the same thing. Thankfully, Biden is still compass mentis enough to realize what that meant. And he called off the dogs of war. I think the U.S. Navy was just delighted to get those ships restrained, not going into the Black Sea, but rather going for repairs in Cyprus.
Yeah, well, I hope you're right about that. The last thing we need is the Navy, you know, out there, the actual guys with the guns leading the charge and trying to come up with a provocation or something like that. So I sure hope that that's right. And I'm sorry I got to end it here because I got to go to my next one. But thank you so much, Ray, for doing the show again. Appreciate it.
You're most welcome.
All right, you guys, that's the great Ray McGovern. Find him at antiwar.com. All right, you all, that is Anti-War Radio for this morning. Thanks very much for listening. I'm your host, Scott Horton. I'm editorial director of antiwar.com and author of the new book, Enough Already, Time to End the War on Terrorism. You can find my full interview archive, more than 5,500 of them now going back to 2003, at scotthorton.org and at youtube.com/ScottHorton Show. And again, I'll be seeing you guys next Saturday, April the 24th, for the End U.S. Support for Israeli Apartheid Conference. That's at IsraelApartheidCon.org. I'm here every Sunday morning from 8:30 to 9 on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A. See you next week.